sequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW Studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW Washington.
In just 3 days, the Poor People's Campaign, led by Bishop William Barber and Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, will take to the streets. Linnell Fall and David Mott from the Maryland Poor People's Campaign are here to tell us what this national call for moral revival is. And on Juneteenth, folks across the country honored, reenacted, commemorated, educated the events and historical legacy of June 19, 1865. Now what do we do? Educational and clinical psychologist Dr. Denise Wright and political scientist Dr. Dennis Rogers join us to discuss next steps. Stay tuned. Good morning and welcome to What's at Stake. I'm your host, Denise Young, filling in for Dr. Marsha Coleman out of Bayou, and we are with you the fourth Wednesday of each month. We have a packed show, and I know you will not want to miss a second of it. I do ask for your positive energy this morning because, with the Dr. Denise Wright and the Dr. Dennis Rogers and the Denise Young is trying to cause me a little bit of trouble this morning, but we're going to get through it. So again, welcome WPFW fam and What's at Stake listeners. This morning, we're going to start off with interviewing Linnell Fall and David Mott, who are with the Poor People's Campaign, the Maryland Poor People's Campaign. And as we talked about in our intro, they're going to shed some light on the upcoming march with the Poor People's Campaign. So good morning and welcome, Linnell and David.
Good morning. Yeah. Hello.
Thank you.
Awesome. Always awesome to have you guys here. Thank you so much. Talk about family. Listen, so we know that we're having this Poor People's Campaign march. So tell us, why is this organization critical to the state of Maryland? Let's first talk about what exactly is happening with the Poor People's Campaign.
So let me just say very briefly, then I'm going to turn it over to Linnell, but the Poor People's Campaign, for people who may not know it, is Martin Luther King's campaign that he started in 1968, and it was his next stop in Washington, D.C. to kick it off when he was assassinated. Mm-hmm. Reverend Barber in North Carolina and Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris revived that campaign in mass in 2018. And this campaign aims to end poverty in America. There are a lot of other intersecting pieces and issues of that, but that is the basis. This is the richest country in the world. We have a poverty level that is atrocious. It has been atrocious and persistent for as long as I can remember. And there are something like 40%, 40, 45% of people in this country are poor and low income. There are over 2 million poor and low-income people in Maryland, and these are folks that work. They work hard. They sometimes work 2 to 3 jobs, and they cannot get ahead. They can't get ahead because we have policies that don't let them get ahead. We have policies that favor rich and punish the poor. And as we say, fight poverty, not the poor. That, in essence, is the Poor People's Campaign. And here in Maryland, we are doing our part to try and put an end to poverty in Maryland. So, Linnell, do you want to? I'll turn it over to you to add, which I'm sure you were able to do.
Okay, thank you. We address the Poor People's Campaign as a national call for moral revival, and we address the 5 interlocking injustices, which we are the only organization, and we have existed over the last 55 years. Dr. King organized this 55 years ago and his wife. And it is systemic racism, poverty, ecological devastation, and the denial of health care, militarism, and the war economy. and the false moral narrative of religious nationalism. And in the state of Maryland, where we have the highest eviction, Maryland is considered the highest eviction capital in the United States. Maryland is considered to have the highest infant mortality rate in the United States. Maryland has a major housing issue. Maryland has a major legislative policy issue that purports poverty policies. We have a serious issue in the state of Maryland with food deserts, issues with people who cannot find enough food to eat. There is a major transportation issue. We have a lot of issues, and the Poor People's Campaign addresses these issues. We have a state coordinating committee that meets every Tuesday. So, and we address a lot of these issues across the board from each region, Baltimore County, Baltimore City, PG County, Moco County, Eastern Shore, from the western part of Maryland, from the southern part of Maryland, from the northern part of Maryland. And we come together and we work together, coordinate within our communities and address the most pressing issues. And right now it is major issues with food, jobs, transportation. Oh, it is just so much devastation here. We have 36.1% of the people here who are poor and low income. And in this country, we have over 51% of our children who are poor. We are in a crisis here. And the campaign wants to address these issues, because in the richest country in the world, we have 800 people per day that are dying.
You know, Linnell and David, as I'm listening to both of you give these staggering statistics, it occurs to me that when we think of a state like Maryland, that we don't think of it, you know, this, you know, very sort of cosmopolitan state, typically a blue state, very liberal. We don't necessarily associate that kind of state profile with the kinds of, using your word, Linnell, the kinds of devastation that we're hearing this morning with infant mortality. I have to admit that one, I've heard some of the other stats, but the infant mortality one really shocked me. So David and Linnell, what happens? What's going on behind the scenes or politically or you know, legislatively that we are seeing this kind of crisis in a state like Maryland?
Well, I mean, I think I go back to, I think it was C. Wright Mills. People may not recognize him, but he was a sociologist. People live quiet lives of desperation, you know, and they live them quietly. And there is this, you know, you hear the politicians talk about the middle class all the time. They don't talk about the working class, you know, they don't talk about the poor. And in this, the goal of this campaign is to inject the issue of poverty squarely into the middle of this presidential election and demand that people talk about it. You know, household debt, that's how people are living. They're living on debt. Household debt is at an all-time high in this country. You know, how do people afford it? They really don't. You know, people can be living what looks like a comfortable life, but inside the walls of their home, they're trying to figure out how they get to tomorrow. And this is, as we say, this is a policy issue. You know, we have given huge tax breaks to the rich. That literally drains our ability to deal with these collective issues and collective crises and challenges. You know, it is not a wonder, you know, that our school systems don't work, you know, because they've been starved of resources. you know, the rich will say, oh, it's not a matter of money. Money doesn't solve everything. Really? Yeah. When you're rich, it does.
Really?
Right. You know, but yes, for poor people. So, I mean, one of the things that I think is it's worth saying is that it has been estimated about $1.7 $2 billion a year spent could end poverty in America. That sounds like a lot of money, but it is not. It is a fraction of the military budget that we spend every year, almost $1 trillion a year on military, right? It's a fraction of that. It is also but 1% of our gross domestic product. Spending 1% of our wealth as a country to end poverty is a great deal, and we should do it. And it is also about the same amount of money that the rich don't pay in their taxes. Mm-hmm. So this is not a matter of there are no resources. There are plenty of resources. They're going into the wrong pockets. And it is a matter of attention focused on solving this problem. And there are a lot of addendums to this. As Linnell said, mm-hmm. we need to expand voting rights here. We need to have universal health care. This is part of what this campaign is. That's how we end poverty, is we take our resources and put them into what makes people healthy. And that is what we're going to be calling for on June 29th.
And we are waking. I'm sorry. Excuse me.
No. Jump right in. You're the guest.
And this campaign within the state of Maryland and across all of our 34 state committee organizing groups and mobilizing groups, we are wake sleeping giant. We need people. Sleeping giants are people who are our infrequent voters, which is 1.1 million in the state of Maryland. We are going out into the communities and we are talking to them and encouraging them to vote, because they have the highest, they can change these elections and the outcomes in these elections within seven states within the United States and the state of Maryland. We have propelled our presidential election for this year with the elimination of poverty on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
If we galvanize and motivate our infrequent voters, they will capitalize on 30% of the electorate across this country and hold a stake in what is taking place. And this is a whole new group of constituencies. These people are fed up with politicians not talking to them, not addressing their needs. They are working 3, 4, and 5 jobs. They are not lazy. They are hardworking people, and they are poor. And it's not right. And that is what the Maryland Poor People's Campaign does. We have a resolution to end poverty in the state of Maryland. Everyone is familiar, should be familiar with this. We've been everywhere within our state affiliates and House and Senate, but we want to get the vote out, and we want 200 people to committed people to help with this, because we're not just getting out the vote. We need people to canvass. We need people to do phone banking and texting, canvassing, tabling at different events. We need people to do postcard writing and, you know, call and do education on civics. It is very, very, it's paramount, because we can make history, and we need to make history, because we have a 17-point agenda. And this agenda is inclusive to changing the narrative of what is taking place in the state of Maryland with our new constituency that are just suffering. They're suffering. And we have discussions all the time, and we bring issues before the people and before our legislators about poverty from the state level, from the city level to the state level to the federal level. That is what the Maryland Poor People's Campaign does. We want people of conscience to join with us on June 29th at 10 o'clock at 3rd and Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest for the mass people, poor people, and low-wage workers assembly and march on Washington, D.C. and to the polls. If you believe that these 17 issues that ought to be at the center of the political agenda, we want, because our votes are our demands. The politicians work for us and not merely our popularity or our personalities, then march and assemble with us, mobilize voters with us, and bring everybody you who believes in love, justice, and truth, and nonviolence. We are a nonviolent organization. We are not a resurrection. We are a resurrection, not an insurrection. Excuse me. That's and okay. We will abolish poverty. Thank you.
I always appreciate your energy, Linnell, your energy and your conviction, and I'm sure that our listeners do as well. One parting question as we wrap this interview up, and David, and that is, when we talk about marching, right? When we talk about marching, and we're looking at sort of a national organization, and then and I know that the Poor People's Campaign doesn't call them chapters, but sort of the state or regional arm of the national organization. How can people be assured that the national and the regional or their state or wherever their location is, that they're really working lockstep with each other? What's the evidence of that? Because I think that that's a question that people get ask about a lot of different other organizations.
Well, I mean, I think first of all is people need to get involved, right? And when you get involved, as we build, you know, we, as Nell said, we are continually building the local branch here, chapter branch here in Maryland. And the more that we do that, the more influence we have in conversations with the national. This is a symbiotic relationship. It is a two-way street, right? And so, yes, there are national goals, such as June 29th. That is a national goal. All people, all hands on deck, because if we don't do that, if we don't move in unison, if we are not united, if there's not solidarity, and we're out all doing different disparate things, then we don't have an impact. On the other hand, there really does have to be attention at the local level about what is happening in Maryland, what is happening in Annapolis, what is happening in Rockville, because there are a lot of local fights, and we in Maryland, Poor People's Campaign, are very involved in those fights. We are very involved with our partners at the local level, all across the state, dealing with rent stabilization, dealing with poverty, dealing, you know, with food desert issues, particularly in Baltimore, right? So there is this, you know, there are several levels of how we operate and what we do. And we are looking for folks at the local level to build our chapter, our branch here, so that we can really be involved even more in local levels. We are at the legislature, you know, we are at city councils, we are going to be at county councils, and we're going to be in Washington, D.C.
Well, I appreciate you, David Mott, and Linnell Falls from the Maryland Poor People's Campaign, joining us this morning. Tell us again the event that is happening and location.
Linnell.
Okay. Mass Poor People's and Low Wage Workers Assembly and Moral March on Washington, D.C. and to the polls. Saturday, June 29th, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard. 3rd and Pennsylvania Avenue, Northwest. We are a resurrection, not an insurrection.
Yeah.
And you can reach us at poorpeoplescampaign.org. Sign up on the bus, get on the train, get on the plane, walk. We have Metro cards. We have all kinds of flyers, and we've yard signs, and we are coming from all across the United States of America to tell our stories, mobilize to the polls and beyond. We want you to stick with us. We want to do a lot of grassroots work to support and eliminate poverty in the state of Maryland. Thank you.
David and Linnell, Thank you again. Have a wonderful day. WPFW listeners, we appreciate you listening in on David and Linnell this morning. So again, thank you. And I have to say that Linnell gave me a wonderful segue with the stick with us comment. At this time, we're going to interview Dr. Dennis Rogers and Dr. Denise Wright. And we wanted to have this conversation because we've been thinking about this idea of this stick with us, right? This how are we in it for the long haul and not just the moment? And as many of you know, just a week ago last Wednesday, we celebrated, we honored, we commemorated, we recognized Juneteenth. And when in doing so, there was a great deal of momentum. And so we just wanted to be able to talk a little bit about that from the perspective of sticking with it. So at this time, I'd like to welcome Dr. Rogers and Dr. Wright. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. How are you today?
I am well. I'm having some tongue twisters this morning.
I know, but there's a lot of D's going on.
It's a lot of D's.
Denise, Dennis, yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy. I used to be in a classroom once for several years in elementary school with a little girl, and her name was Denise Hunt. And so depending upon where you were in the classroom, you weren't sure if you heard Denise Hunt or Denise Young. You know, that's how it goes sometimes. We're going to get through it this morning.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So again, welcome. So before we really get deep into our conversation, Dr. Rogers, Dr. Wright, please tell us who you are so our WPFW family, What's at Stake listeners know who they are embracing this morning. And Dr. Rogers, why don't you start us off?
Yes. Good morning, WPFW listeners. My name is Dr. Dennis Rogers. I guess I would say I'm a double alum of Howard University in political science.
Hate you.
And I intentionally wanted to be, you know, like Dr. Ronald Walters, whose perennial question was, what does that have to do with the liberation of Black people? Mm-hmm. And because I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina, where SNCC was founded, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, we just heard of Reverend Barber. And his Poor People's Campaign was actually launched here in Raleigh. We're in the crucible of social change. And so within that spirit, that's how I present myself to the WPFW audience.
Well, thank you. And thank you. Dr. Wright?
Yes. Good morning, everyone. WPFW, one of my favorites. So my name is Denise Wright. I'm a psychologist by trade. I got my doctorate from Howard University. My long range activism over a period of years started, you know, with my parents and seeing what they went through in terms of their challenges and struggles to maintain, you know, the family. I have a lot of people within my family have done a lot of different things with regard to trying to balance out the imbalance. My uncle in Detroit, Michigan, he's the founder of the Charles H. Wright Museum in Detroit, along with Coleman Young. You know, I just saw all those things coming up and going through and seeing, you know, how we can collaborate and do things together and be able to represent properly with regard to, you know, our history and giving, you know, everyone, you know, intergenerational context for what we've been through. So I really appreciate being on here with you this morning. So
thank you. So as I mentioned in the intro, we know last week was on Juneteenth, and both of you were part of that broadcast, and it was a wonderful broadcast, and we saw events happening all across the DMV area. We know that people across the nation were honoring, and there was just really incredibly rich educational, informational, inspirational things that were happening. And so that happened. So what do we do next? How do we harness that energy, that momentum, you know, that love and direction? Because I think a lot of times what seems to happen is that we have these occurrences that mean so much to our community, and then it seems that we it's almost like the bubbles fizzle, and we lose something.
I think that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is, it is a political socializing opportunity. So mm-hmm. annually, we know the Super Bowl will come. We know the NBA All-Star Game will come. We know that, you know, the CBC will come.
Yes.
And each of these instances, it's a new opportunity for us to shape what the future means, how we interpret the past. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I go to Ossie Davis, who said during his speech at the first dinner of the first Congressional Black Caucus Foundation, he said, it's not the man, it's the plan. Turn the page and let's go to work. And so ultimately, we define what will be next for us collectively and individually. We know it's right now convention season and everyone's meeting every place. The Omegas, Q Sci Fi, just had they're coming up in Tampa. A lot of people are railing against that because the NAACP said, let's boycott Florida. Hmm. And there are tensions in our leadership, as there always has been. But I think we as a people, almost like Solomon, you know, we need to ask God for wisdom so that we can lead our people properly to where it is we should go. And there have been plans written in the past that we could speak to. And I can, you know, come back to that at the next round, unless you'd like me to continue at this time.
Go right ahead.
Yeah. So if you look at the back of Chancellor Williams' Destruction of Black Civilization in the last chapter, he lays out a plan. If you look at Amos Wilson's Blueprint for mm-hmm. Black Power, he lays out a plan. If you look at the Black Agenda under the Congressional Black Caucus, when Maxine Waters, the Honorable Congresswoman, was the chair, she railed against crack cocaine epidemic in our community, and they laid out a Black agenda. Mm-hmm. Tavis Smiley, with the help of all of the others that gave input, laid out the covenant. The Black Futures Lab has laid out the Black Census report. So there are plans upon plans. I think it's a matter of the Valley of the Dry Bones connecting our organizations that take on a particular element of that plan mm-hmm. in order to execute that element, not just in the Beltway of D.C., but around the nation. You know, in every community, there are Panhellenic councils. In every community where we are, there are Black churches, eight denominations, you know, up to eight mm-hmm. denominations, Black denominations. Everywhere we are, we have the opportunity to organize, being connected to the head of our leadership on the local level. So it's really in our hands is what we're going to do with the plans that we've laid out, because we know the opposition. We know that others lay out plans.
Yes.
The Heritage Foundation laid out Project 2025.org.
Yes.
And they say on the first day of a Republican administration, here's a plan. It may not be the plan fully adapted, but at least they've taken the time to think through what is a plan. And so I think our people look to our leadership for a plan that they can buy into and be a part of, like they bought into or they're buying into the concept of Juneteenth over time.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up with Dr. Rogers said with regard to number one, we talk about the plan that they have now at the Heritage Foundation. I kind of went through and strolled through it, read it last night. Well, it sounds very similar to something that was going on 200 years ago. I mean, it's the same thing. It's to harness, you know, power, economic power, all these things. So you know, a vessel for control. Mm-hmm. That is the same thing warmed over. And so when we talk about these all these different plans that have been created by, you know, not only our ancestors, but, you know, contemporarily in terms of like Tavis Smiley and what have you, there, it does have a plan. And we talked about the Muslims, you know, they had a plan. They were talking about, you know, going, getting your own land, you know, growing your own food. These kinds of things were put out there, you know, decades ago. You know, our ancestors were doing it a long time ago. But at the end of the day, I think the motivation and the collaboration and the synergy around survival and feeling entitled to be empowered, mm-hmm, is a really big deal.
Dr. Wright, I'm going to, and we're going to pick up on that point just a moment, because we're going to take a 2-minute break. You're listening to What's at Stake on WPFW, and we'll be right back after the station break.
This is Robin Holden. On Sunday, July 7th, from 4 until 8 p.m., WPFW is presenting a fundraising evening of roots, rock, reggae at Mango Cafe, 4719 Annapolis Road in Blaytonsburg, Maryland, featuring the Proverbs Reggae Band with Z Lion and special guests Freedom and Saroma Lee L. Proceeds to benefit WPFW. Details, WPFWFM.org.
PACA, Pan-African Community Action, will be holding the Community Town Hall, The Harm of Crime Bills, and the Future of Community Power in Chaka City. On Saturday, July 13th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., D.C. residents are invited to discuss how the Secure D.C. Crime Bill targets the Black working class and criminalizes our youth, and how to develop real people-centered solutions to community safety. There will be speakers, group exercises, lunch, and a performance by the Afro-Go-Go Roots Collective, Crank Lukongo Unplugged. The Harm of Crime Bills and the Future of Community Power in Chocolate City, Saturday, July 13th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the RISE Demonstration Center, 2730 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C. More information and registration can be found online, PACA, that's P-A-C-A, crimebilltownhall.eventbrite.com. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Welcome back. You're listening to What's at Stake on WPFW. I am Denise Young, and we are here with Dr. Dennis Rogers and Dr. Denise Wright. And so, Dr. Wright, just before the break, you were talking about how all of these plans that we know have existed, that are that do exist, that our ancestors were doing these things, these very things that we are, that these plans have been advocating and championing for in our community. So continue with that thought.
So yeah, in reference to what we were talking about is, you know, looking at these things from, you know, kind of zooming back and looking at the context, and how do we even begin to approach these things? And one of the things that we need to just keep in mind is that we have built this country. We've done a lot of things, brilliant contributions to all different things with regard to science, transportation, economics, all these things. And there should be a sense of being vested and being able to garner as many resources as possible. And I think people need to kind of like have their head around that. Everybody's kind of like on the same page. Yes, no, people don't agree about reparations. They don't agree about reparations or how we should get it, but that's not the issue. The issue is we're entitled to reparations. That's it. So however you want it, that's fine. But at the end of the day, I think we get mired in minutia around these issues, and then it ends up not going where it needs to go. So I think, you know, just having those discussions and having, you know, kind of coherent discussions and looking at the long run and looking at what's going to happen for the next generations, because the roadmap is there. We just need to follow it.
You said earlier, Dr. Wright, and it really got me thinking when you were giving your introduction to the WPFW and What's at Stake listeners, you were talking about your own experience and how you grew up seeing what was happening, seeing who was doing, who was making, creating, building, governing, because you mentioned Mayor Coleman Young. And so when you talk about that, and this question is to both you and Dr. Rogers, when we think about this idea of our organizations, you mentioned SNCC. I'm a huge, I feel like we are all in debt to SNCC and what it has done and what it has meant to us and who it's produced. But when we think about this idea of seeing it happening, that we were able to do that, what are our thoughts about, or what are your thoughts about that dynamic today? Like, what are the examples, or what do our young people take away from what they see happening in organizations? Are they seeing enough things happening in our organization to be food for thought, to be food for activism, to be food for community engagement?
Well, my mind goes in a couple of different directions, but I'll say this. So we know that we had flourishing civilizations before the engagement of enslavement with this nation. And so for over 200 years, we theorized, we fought for, we conceptualized, we articulated the end of enslavement. And it took 200 years for us to get there. But here we are at the end of enslavement. And then after that, politically speaking, we wanted a civil rights bill that was one of 1865, one of 1964, more legislation. So life is a struggle, and our leg of the race, we must run and pass the baton, you know, to the next generation. I think, like breathing, that, you know, every day and every activity we see is an exercise. So for many, the George Floyd response, 41,000 global protest, was a politically socializing moment. We heard the voices of young people clarionly say, you know, hands up, don't shoot. We want to live. Get off my neck. Get your foot off my neck. And so in currently, if we listen to what young people are telling us, what they're saying is we're distracted by all of this media coming through the telephone. We're losing our attention. And we need to be, whether it's taken out in nature, which is where you find me today, we need to be taken out of the matrix and communicated with clearly so that we can be shared the frame of thinking and the tools necessary to advance our community. If we wanted to produce more physicists, there's an Association of Black Physicists. More chemists, National Society of Black Engineers is 50 years strong. We have solutions within our community. It's just a matter of us connecting these dots that George Frazier talks about, you know, success runs in our race. Every solution imaginable, there's a human being within our community, or there's an organization within our community that's addressing that particular issue in Detroit, like the museum that was developed. And then there are other museums, African American Museum Association, in other cities addressing similar issues. And we need to cross-fertilize these solutions into our community, you know, from D.C. to L.A. and all points in between.
Dr. Wright.
Yeah, I think when we talk about young people and being aware of what's happening, I think one of the foils that we have is social media. That's an issue because there's this vortex of all these things that cause the brain to respond, you know, in such a way where you're able to, you're kind of like sucked into this kind That's of right. void of whatever. And I got caught up in it the other day. I never go on Facebook and TikTok is very rare. But when I do, I look, I'm going through all this stuff and I'm like, oh, let me look at this. I look up a half an hour is gone. I have no idea where it went. But a lot of the kids are going through that. And if you look in just in general and you do observation of individuals who are standing on street corners or walking down the street staring at their phones, okay, this is something that we really, really are going to have to basically, you know, in terms of intervention or strong recommendations and suggestions to kind of like veer away from that type of screen time. And so this impact on the younger generations is one in such that it has affected their mood, behavior, and all this other kind of stuff. So it's up to, you know, us, you know, the grandparents, the parents or whatever, to really reinforce being grounded within something and offering some type of context so the kids feel more tethered to something.
Yeah.
Okay. Because this is where we're having a lot of problems with the, you know, rates of suicide, which have gone up.
That's right.
Seriously, yes. You know, over the course of 10 years. And we're talking about Black folks. Okay. So
yes.
This is so crazy because I was reading a CDC article and they literally said within the journal article, and much to the surprise of the researchers, the Black, suicide rates among Black males and other, you know, and females has risen over the past decade. I mean, they literally put that in the thing because we were not known for these suicide rates. And so when we look at some of those indicators, external indicators, it tells us how we need to be, you know, harness this information, be more collaborative, be more communicative, because texting is not getting it.
Right.
You don't arrive to someone's house. That's a little humor here. You don't arrive to someone's house and don't ring the doorbell, but text them that you're here. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is where we are.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, in terms of looking at where we were in terms of the discussion, this is something that we really need to another thing that we need to put on the agenda.
And with the growth of artificial intelligence, you know, there have been people mainly led by women that are coming out of Africa, an Ethiopian sister, a sister from Kenya. They have an organization called Blacks in AI.
Mm-hmm.
And they speak directly to this notion that the programmers of AI, if they have what Dick Gregory used to call a white racist mentality,
right,
then they're going to program AI with a white racist mentality. So even as Black folks are playing and working in the artificial intelligence space, it's very important that our young people who are consumers of all this information, that we begin to take away their phones. Like if you went to an Obama party and they put out the bag and they said, everybody put their phone in the bag.
Right,
no one can take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You go to a concert. They put them in these magnetized bags so they can't record and no one. So we can do that with our children in our home. We can do that when we take them out and have social experiences with them. At the end of the day, if we focus our young people on being who God created them to be, being creators of reality, being the architects of the new millennium, being the people that are going to bring forth the future through their actions, then they can look at whether it's artificial intelligence or whatever field of study they're looking at. They look at it from a, I need to produce in this space perspective. Then we can have an honest conversation about more Black ownership of Black businesses. Just one solution. If you take the U.S. Black Chamber of Commerce and you say they have, for the sake of numbers, 100 chapters in 100 cities, and each of those 100 chapters have 100 businesses, then that's 10,000 businesses. Why not the successful business in San Francisco offer a franchise to the other 99 chapters of their business to someone in those other 99 cities?
Right.
And why can't that be done with all of that? So if our objective is to be the number one employer of our people, then 25% of us who work for the government, federal, state, local government, the other 75% of us, quite a significant number, work corporate, you know, small business owners. Why can't we begin to have these discussions? I have a successful accounting business. I'm in this market. You're way across the country in your market. Let us foster your successful accounting business. And again, our organizations are the perfect place to do that.
Go ahead.
No, absolutely not. You go ahead.
I wanted to segue from what Dr. Rogers was saying. And, you know, one of my favorite sayings is that the health of a people determines the wealth of a nation, or the wealth of a nation depends on the health of its citizens. Amen. And that means mentally and physically and spiritually. And so, you know, looking at from that perspective, you know, we need to, you know, we talk about the younger people. I routinely tell them, look into the agrarian sciences, look into water management. Okay. You talk about a war going on. Oh, it's going to be a war over that. Like they were talking about the Poor People's Campaign in terms of the food deserts. This is by design. It's not by, you know, oh, whoops, we made a mistake in the urban plan. These things are by design. And so if we're more active and, you know, continue to be active and more active at the state and local level, we can begin to steer some of these things. Because, again, this discussion is not new.
Just like in the past, when our people created what became the ADTs of the world, the backbone of the internets of the world, there's a gentleman, his name escapes me, but he's figured out, and there's a science to extracting moisture from air, you know, hydrogen, oxygen, and actually creating water from air. And so there are solutions that are out there in the water space. There are Black folks in North Carolina that have a mineral springs where the water comes up out of the ground with all of these minerals that Dr. Sebi would say we need in our body, since we have 110 minerals in our body. So, you know, again, there are solutions. It's a matter of us saying, just take legislatively one more time, since we're in DC and we're talking politics. If the National Caucus of Black State Legislators said, here's the legislation as we've gotten passed in our state assembly for the last 20 years. And you put that information in the hands of political scientists and other elected officials. Here is a model of policy that can be implemented in other communities. And each community is uniquely different, but there are some similarities between them all. There are solutions that are being implemented every day. It's a matter of us spreading those solutions across the nation to all of our communities, in my opinion.
When you were talking earlier and you was like, why can't we do this or why can't we do this? My question is that what we're talking about when we say sort of mired in the minutia? Like what is the barrier? Because what you just talked about, what you and Dr. Wright talked about, sounds not only very logical, but it sounds very doable. And so then the question becomes, so why isn't it happening?
We have, some of us, been programmed for self-sabotage. You know, we have, some of us, been programmed not to implement solutions, but to maintain the status quo. We, some of us, have been paid to, you know, prevent progress. We know that that was the case again during the period of enslavement. There were those who undermined it, the freedom struggle. So, you know, what we have to recognize, as William Lacy Clay said in the book Permanent Interest, is we have no permanent friends. We have no permanent enemies. And that exists, you know, in our families. We have blowouts and we get back together in our communities and our neighborhoods. And that exists within the body politic, even in the Black body politic, which is not monolithic in its thinking, that there is resistance. There is a pendulum that swings, you know, to the left and to the right. There is the arc of justice, which bends, but over a period of time. So those of us who want to work with others, those of us within the sound of our voices, and who may pick this up later, who can see the value in what we're saying, as John Henry Clark said, when I asked him, Dr. Clark, how do young people honor the elders who've laid out the type work you have? He said, continue the work. Mm-hmm. Pick up the work and do the work where you are. Denzel Washington has his motivational speech where at the end of it, he says, let's go to work. And that's what we need to do.
That's what we need to do. Dr. Shockley, who was also part of the Juneteenth broadcast, essentially said the same thing, and that is that we have to continue to create, we have to continue to build. Dr. Wright, your thoughts?
Yes, in terms of addressing that, in terms of being having a platform, my thing is focus on the obvious, the survival, economic empowerment, those things. I mean, everybody can agree to that. We're entitled to these things. If you go in, like Rogers was saying, if you go in thinking you're not entitled, if you go in having a certain type of mindset, which, by the way, does transpire when you have, you know, decades and centuries of oppression, you're going to be eroded down. The system is designed to wear you down. The system is designed to divide you. The system is designed for you to look at a place and you may have a total interpretation than your European counterpart, okay? This is where it comes in. So if you look in the context of history, you'll see all these things happening. And so at the end of the day, it's about having a collaborative chorus of focusing in on one thing, and that is our entitlement to survival, period. Now, how we get there, there's so many ways to get there because the plans are there. But everybody coming together and being agreeing on that is one thing that we really need to concentrate on. And, you know, the thing is, like back in the 60s and the 70s, what's going on, Marvin Gaye, there was a certain type of rhythm going on.
That's right.
Synergy. And everybody's like, yeah, brother, what's up? You know, nowadays, nobody even speaks. Yeah. Folks look the other way and stuff.
They're looking at the phone.
Right,
they're looking at the phone.
So it's just a sense of acknowledgement and stuff like that. You know, folks down south, you know, respect the elders. Yes, man. I mean, those kind of nuances with regard to, you know, how we comport ourselves is slowly being eroded. And my thing is, pick up the phone, say hello to people on the street. These are simple things that we can do. Because that is the, you know, socialization, how we're socialized is extremely key. And if we begin to lose that, we lose our culture. We lose our language. We lose the nuances.
And when it comes to food, I think of Baba Oduno Tariq, who said there could be no culture without agriculture.
Yes.
And I think of the Black farmers and the plight of the Black farmers. And the reality is Black farms exist in and around Maryland, in and around Virginia. Nearkirk Farms out in Beltsville is a community farm facilitated by the University of the District of Columbia, specifically for the purpose of educating District of Columbia citizens on how to cultivate food properly and nutrition, et cetera. And so we have, again, you know, solutions in our community we need to connect to. There are other local farms in the District of Columbia where people are community-based farms growing food that you can eat what you grow. And every time you eat, there are probably some seeds somewhere. Mm. If you save your seeds, and like we did when we were in elementary school, cut a plastic bottle, put sand in it, and put some soil in it, put your seed inside the soil, you can begin to flower up, you know, plants that eventually will bear fruit and you can eat from the seed that you once consumed the whole fruit from.
Right. And I think so. This is a cool, because when we talk about collaboration between organizations, the farm in Beltsville, Poor People's Campaign,
Right.
Collaborating and coming together to feed folks or whatever, and being having an avenue, in terms of being able to funnel this food that rots on the farms because there's not enough people, not enough exposure, folks don't know what's there, that kind of thing. And really establishing that pipeline.
Right.
You know that's so wild. Let me just say, if I may, please. So what happens when we do that is we reduce our contradictions. Imagine a Poor People's Campaign where people have to, you know, somehow get to D.C., have a place to stay or sleep in their, you know, in their vehicle, and they got to get something to eat. And all of the restaurants, a lot of them, the food is quite expensive.
Yeah, or not too expensive. But they would have that to at their fingertips. This has been so wonderful, Dr. Wright, Dr. Rogers. Thank you so much. What's at Stake, listeners? We've wrapped another epic episode. Thank you to our guests, Linnell Fall, David Mott from the Maryland Poor People's Campaign, and again, Dr. Dennis Rogers and Dr. Denise Wright. Thanks to executive producer Ms. Verna Avery Brown. This program is engineered by Mr. Michael Nasella. And thank you to Dr. Marsha Coleman Adebayo for the opportunity to host in her absence. I'm Denise Young, and I appreciate you, WPFW listeners. Stay tuned for our next show, Wake Up and Stay Woke, with Dr. Ife Williams.
Hi, this is Robin Holden. On Sunday, July 7th, from 4 until 8 p.m., WPFW is presenting a fundraising evening of roots, rock, reggae at Mango Cafe, 4719 Annapolis Road in Blaytonsburg, Maryland, featuring Proverbs Reggae Band with Z Lion and special guests Freedom and Saroma Lee L. Proceeds to benefit WPFW. Details, WPFWFM.org.
PACA, Pan-African Community Action, will be holding the Community Town Hall, The Harm of Crime Bills, and the Future of Community Power in Chaka City. On Saturday, July 13th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., D.C. residents are invited to discuss how the Secure D.C. Crime Bill targets the black working class and criminalizes our youth, and how to develop real people-centered solutions to community safety. There will be speakers, group exercises, lunch, and a performance by the Afro-Go-Go Roots Collective, Crank Lukongo Unplugged. The Harm of Crime Bills and the Future of Community Power in Chocolate City, Saturday, July 13th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Rise Demonstration Center, 2730 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C. More information and registration can be found online, PACA, that's P-A-C-A, crimebilltownhall.eventbrite.com. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The Collision, where sports and politics smash. Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
The Pacifica National Board and the WPFW Local Station Board will be voting on a proposed Pacifica Bylaws Amendment between July 10th and August 24th of 2024. Information on the amendment, about how vacancies are filled on local station boards, and about the process will be posted on the pacifica.org website.
WPFW's 2024 election to seat members to represent you on the local station board has started. Renew your membership by making a minimum donation of $25 or completing 3 hours of eligible volunteer work by June 30th in order to be a candidate, nominate candidates, or vote. Visit elections.pacifica.org for more information or call 707-500-1910 to leave a voicemail for the election supervisor.
Sego, this is John Kane, and I want to invite you to join me right here on WPFW on Fridays at 2 p.m. for Let's Talk Native. I will deliver guests and commentary each week on the real-life issues facing Native people. No romanticizing and no Hollywood stereotypes here. We'll talk real history and culture and life as it is and as it should be. Our shows are available as podcasts on your favorite podcast platforms and as videos on our Let's Talk Native TV YouTube channel. Find links and more at our website, www.letstalknative.com. And I'll see you here Fridays at 2 p.m. for Let's Talk Native with John Kane.
Hi, this is Tom Cole, host of G-Strings, here on WPFW every Sunday morning. I and the rest of the station's volunteers and staff would like to invite you to join the WPFW Legacy Listener Circle by making a contribution to the station's future through your estate plan. There are a lot of ways to do that, through your IRA or retirement plan, by gifting us life insurance, or through your donor-advised fund. We'd be happy to have a confidential discussion with you as you consider a planned gift to the station. Please reach out to us at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or call us at 202-588-0999. Thank you for considering becoming a part of WPFW's future.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m.